All right, welcome everybody to another edition of Talking Cloud. I'm Brett.
And I'm Travers.
There we go. Well rehearsed this week.
Yeah.
It's episode 15-ish?
15 sounds right.
Yeah.
I think it's 15.
Let's go with 15. It's a nice number, right? I wanted to start the episode, as we always do, with some movie talk. And
oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, we were talking about this the other day. I guess it's not officially or really a movie, but I found Fallout. I didn't even know that they were turning it into a TV show. I guess it's a TV
new
show.
Series.
Yeah.
On Prime.
Prime. So it's related to the podcast, right? It's on Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Amazon.
Amazon adjacent. There we go. So we were talking about this with a couple folks last week, and I thought the comment, "I'm scared and excited," was like the perfect way to sum it up.
Well, you know, after how the Halo show went, I don't know. I guess we'll see. The trailer looks good. So
the trailer looks really good. And I was also joking when we were talking about it that immediately triggered both my wife and I wandering around the house singing Fallout songs from the video games. She's not a gamer, but you know, Fallout was just such a huge thing. Like, I played a lot of Fallout, and she just sort of learned about Fallout through osmosis. So I think she's equally as excited, just because she knows a little bit about the sort of story, just because I played the game for so long. But we'll see how it goes. I hope it's good. I hope it's good.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I played a lot of 3 and 4, and they're some of my favorite games. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, you know, I would put it right up there with the game, and I forget what it's called, but basically you were under the ocean. And
oh, it's BioShock.
BioShock. Like, it's right there with BioShock. what a fantastic game that
classic.
Was too, right? So
yeah, absolute classic.
Yeah, fingers crossed. When does it start? Does it start this week? I think it starts this week, right?
It's soon. It's pretty soon, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the only movie thing I could think of this week, just because I stumbled across it and I'm like, "Oh, I really hope that this is good." Right? So, we'll see. We'll see. All right. Oh, hey Kevin. Welcome to the show. Let's get rolling with some updates. Here we go.
All right.
First update. First Amazon update for the week. If I can, one day I'll figure out the Zoom here. Come on, Zoom. Jeez. Okay. So Mistral has been on Bedrock for a while. I always forget the names. Do they give us the names of the other models that have been available? Like, it's 7B or 7XB or something like that.
Yeah.
It's been there for a bit, but now we've got the large foundation model available as well. So
yeah. So
it's kind of like, is this really news anymore? Like, it seems like every week there's just like, here's another model that's available on Bedrock.
Yep. And I mean, you know, 32K token context, good for resource augmented generation, and yeah, more choice on Bedrock, basically, is what it boils down to.
Yeah, which I think kind of goes back to what we talked about last week. I wanted to say Andy Jassy, but it isn't Andy Jassy anymore, right? Adam Sablinski.
Sablinski?
Yeah, sorry, butcher the name, right? Remember we had that article where the gist of the article was, we want to control 99% of the AI market. We had a little chuckle about it. I think this is a good example of maybe what Amazon's strategy is here, is if we have all of the models in one place and allow you to easily switch between the model that you feel is the best for your use case, then we will probably end up gobbling up a lot of the AI workloads in the end.
Why would you want to go anywhere else, right?
Yeah. You know, here's a question. I have a question about the context, the token context, in a second. I want to compare that to my current favorite model. But the first question that came to mind is, like, how does Bedrock, with the models that it supports, compare to other cloud providers? Like, to be honest, like, I'm so focused on AWS, like, we don't do anything other than this. So to be honest, I don't
even
know. Can you run these things on other providers? I have no clue.
That's a good question. I know Surely Microsoft must have availability for OpenAI's models, right? Like they're so invested, there's no way they don't.
Yeah, which kind of is a good not segue, but it reminds me of that article we looked at last week. The what was it? Remember the Gen AI report that said, depending on your service provider, you're more likely to use a particular engine. So if you're on Azure, you're going to use OpenAI. If you're on AWS, you're going to use, I can't remember what it was. Was it Anthropic?
Anthropic's Claude models are the big ones, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't
And
know,
now
but
Mistral.
and now Mistral, yeah. And I did try this out. I ran a couple prompts through my current favorite Claude, right, with Sonnet. And I took the same prompt and I ran it through Mistral. I didn't really do, any sort of in-depth look at it, but it was really snappy. And it the responses were reasonably good from both of the models. I wouldn't trust it 100%. Still took it, reread everything, did some additional research to make sure that what was in there was actually correct. I can't even remember what it was that I ran through it, but yeah, it was quick and it gave me a decent answer, like as a starting point. So yeah.
I mean,
Okay.
they're all pretty good for that kind of stuff, right? Like the big models, so.
Yeah, I kind of don't like, the thing I think that's going to be interesting to see how this plays out over time is if all the big models are pretty good, then does it really matter which one you use in the end? You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, right.
what's going to differentiate them at the end? I don't know.
You'll be that's why you'll be seeing more specifically trained models for like niche use cases, that kind of stuff, surely.
Okay. So here's my other question is, as you mentioned on this one, you've got a 32K token context. Do you recall, and I didn't Google this, but maybe you can for me. What's the token context of Anthropic's Claude? Like, I don't know what it is.
I want to say it was over 100,000.
Yeah, I
Okay,
want to
so
say it's big.
Sonnet is 200,000 tokens.
200,000 tokens.
So, yeah,
Yeah,
Claude
so
3
it's
Sonnet with
much bigger.
200K, much bigger,
Yeah,
which is
much
about
bigger than that.
500 pages of material.
Yeah.
So if you scope it down, what is that? That's about a quarter, an eighth almost of
Yeah.
that
Yeah.
for Mistral.
Yeah.
So the
Again,
context
does
wasn't
it
there.
is it going to really matter for a lot of use cases? Probably
No.
not. I don't know, right?
The
I
difference
think
is it's open source, right?
Oh yeah, good point. Mistral's open source, Anthropic is not. Yeah. And that was one of the things we talked about last week too, is that in enterprises they're leaning towards open source for a number of reasons. So maybe that is a bit of an advantage that Mistral will have in the end. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, cool. So that's our first AWS update of the week. Here's another interesting one. Man. There we go. Just takes 14 tries. There we go. So CloudWatch now supports cross-account anomaly detection. Yeah, I don't. This is, you know what? This is another great example of just a quality of life type update. Like, just
Yet
is.
another
Oh, go ahead.
concentrating the this kind of observability in a dashboard in one pane, basically, right?
Yeah.
One account.
Yeah, I love anomaly detection. I think it comes from my days of working on Tivoli and stuff like that, and doing monitoring, and all the thresholds were static. And what always happened was, we weren't actually managing servers or anything. We were just monitoring those servers for other groups. And what would happen is those groups would go off and make changes and not tell us. So the threshold that used to work was good was no longer any good, and it would invariably be waking you up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and you'd be trying to
Surprise.
figure out what's happening, and then the team would be like, oh yeah, we changed that. So I think anomaly detection is like, I think from a monitoring perspective, it's almost a, I know it's not supported everywhere in CloudWatch, but sort of my default is if you can use anomaly detection, you probably You'd have to convince me not to use it.
Yeah, it's probably the default, right? Like you.
Yeah.
It depends how often you or how stable your workload is, I suppose. What kind of metrics you're getting out of that, but yeah, in general, it's probably a good choice.
Yeah. Now, my recollection of anomaly detection is that it costs you more money. Doesn't it? Yeah.
I think there's a premium.
Yeah. I guess that goes along with the standard theme we have in the show every week is make sure you understand the pricing models before you do anything that we say on the show, right? always be safe. Read RTFM. We should say RTFP. Read the bleep pricing pages. There we go. Make sure you understand the pricing model. But yeah, I think this is great. And when you compare or when you combine this with something like there was another feature, consolidated CloudWatch feature. We're using it in a couple accounts. Health monitoring, where you can consolidate all your health monitors into one spot. So to your point about sort of having, something near and dear to my heart from Tivoli days is a single pane of glass.
Right.
Here we go again, right? It just took, I don't want to do the math of years in my head, but we're back to the same thing. But I like the idea of getting everything into a monitoring account.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good, makes good sense one. To me.
Yeah. Perfect. Now, when I saw this, so my first thing was, and this is going to sound really mean, does anybody run Chef anymore?
Who does?
Who?
GitLab does in their setup.
Because when we run our GitLab CTL reconfigure commands and stuff, they're Chef recipes, aren't they?
Yeah.
So there we go. You can now run Chef 11 to 18 recipes on Windows using Systems Manager. I do like the idea of being able to run the recipes through Systems Manager.
Yeah, and that's great.
Yeah.
And on Windows too, which can be a bit finicky with those System Manager commands, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's handy.
Yeah. Okay, so it says here at the bottom, the release also adds support for HTTP and private repositories, which means Systems Manager can run Chef recipes stored in GitHub, S3, private Git repositories, and even HTTP locations. That's kind of neat.
Okay. That's cool. I didn't see that when I saw this news post, but that could be handy.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So if you're a Chef user, here you go. This is probably probably interesting. This one also made me smile as I saw this guy introducing code connections, formerly known as code star connections. Because I mentioned Tivoli already, let's go back to Tivoli again. This kind of stuff reminds me of my Tivoli days. We used to spend so much time talking to customers and we'd be like, oh, well, that's not a new service. It's not, you know, new Tivoli. It's just actually this product that we've changed the name of. But it's the exact same thing. And I kind of took this as really just CodeStar connections. Now they've just dropped the CodeStar, which actually makes sense because I think CodeStar is kind of one of those services that won't go away, but really isn't referred to anymore, right? What replaced CodeStar?
There's a code commit, build in that family.
Yeah, but isn't there like, because CodeStar was actually really cool when it came out. Like what you could do is, you know, with, you were mentioning code commit and code build and all that and code pipeline. So before CodeStar, you would have to build those pipelines out yourself. And then with CodeStar, you could go in there and say, I want to create a project, a web project, whatever it might be. And CodeStar was really just, at least the way that I kind of thought of it, was like a layer of abstraction above the complexity of that pipeline. And it built the pipeline for you. And they replace that with, is it Code Catalyst that does this now?
It might be. Honestly, I haven't touched these services too much.
I don't.
But it's like DevOps pipelines as a service, right?
Yeah. So this one caught my eye for a couple reasons. Because it's a name change, which always makes me smile. Because, you know, the platform isn't big, and it's already, what am I trying to say? The platform is already massive and it changes so much, yeah. But let's throw name changes at people too, just to really keep them on their toes. And then the other thing, yeah, the other thing that caught my eye with this is just the fact that, you know, sort of same thing I said about Chef. I don't ever remember anybody running Code Star. So yeah, I don't know. I might be throwing shade here at Code Connections without really understanding. Maybe a lot of people use this. You look at the second paragraph here, it has a lot of integration. So you know, it might connects be important.
GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, right? So they're they have that connectivity. Yeah. Which I mean, it can abstract away maybe some of the CI work you need to do in those platforms to connect AWS, which could be interesting. But
yeah,
I don't think we have anyone who's used it.
No. You know, I don't know. You know, maybe what we should do is maybe I'll add this to my list and say, let's set up CodeStar connections in one of our demo accounts before next week so I can hang my head in shame and say, hey, this is actually really cool and I shouldn't have been such a a-hole about it. But hey, you know what? I think the thing that I've always liked about AWS is it's like in a lot of training sessions I do, I use this silly analogy. It's like grade 12 English. There are no wrong answers. You can, it's your opinion. Go out and find the thing that works for you. And if it's if it works for you, then do it, right? Right. Kind of like my grade 12 English class. Never, you can't really have a wrong answer in English, right? Or in English class? I don't think you can.
Yeah. I guess it depends on the teacher, right?
I guess, yeah. Yeah. All right, guard duty. We talk about guard duty a lot. This one is really interesting to me. So guard duty now has runtime monitoring as GA. So you can use this everywhere. And you can see, I think the first sentence in the second paragraph here really sums this up. It helps you identify and respond to potential threats, including instances or self-managed containers in your AWS environment that are querying IP addresses associated with cryptocurrency-related activity or making connections to a Tor network as a Tor relay. Yep. So either of those things are probably things that you don't want to have running in your environment, unless you intend to do that, right?
Unless you're running an AWS cloud Bitcoin miner operation.
Yeah.
I don't think you're allowed to do that, but
I would think they probably would not want you to do that, right?
I don't know. I don't think you would want to anyways.
Probably cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless it's somebody else's bill, which hence why we need these types of things, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is just another example of I say this all the time, the quality of life kind of thing, right? And from my perspective, guard duty should be enabled in every single one of your accounts. It gives you a great way to kind of understand what's happening, right? Within your environments, whether it's, you know, indications of account compromise, whether it's indications of EC2 compromise in your accounts.
Yeah.
And now you've just got sort of this extra feature. But there is a cost for this. So what did I say earlier on? RTFPP?
Something like that.
Yeah. Understand the pricing page before you turn anything on. All right. So there you've got that. And then Lambda update for Ruby.
Yeah. So this was kind of interesting. They added support for Ruby 3.3. So if you're running Ruby and Lambda, then you might want to pay attention. There's some interesting updates in 3.3. For example, I think they improved the just-in-time compiler for that, so it should run a little faster. And then there's other updates too. So if you're looking for the latest and greatest in Ruby, you can run it on Lambda now.
Yeah, actually, when you added this one to the list, I forwarded it off to a customer of ours because they're using Ruby quite extensively for a large part of a couple solutions that we're running for them. There's another development team and they're using Ruby to do that. So I just shot it off to them so they had a heads up that might be something that they want to look at going forward, kind of for some of the same comments that you just made, right? So
yeah,
good stuff. There was something else AWS sort of update related that popped into my head before the show started, and I was like, make sure you mention that, and it's, of course, it's gone. So we're just going to move on. We're going to move on.
Perfect.
Yeah. So here you go. This sort of made the headlines or the news just, I don't know, a couple days ago. And really what led me to this is there were news articles about more layoffs at AWS. And
right.
Yeah, you know, that sucks. But as I was reading the article about it, I found this link because some of the folks that are being affected by those layoffs are the teams that were working on the Just Walk Out technology. Mm. So
okay.
This article kind of explains sort of where Amazon is heading with it. It's not that the technology is going away. It's that based off of customer feedback, what Amazon is saying is that customers enjoyed the ability to bypass the line. They were less enthusiastic about the fact that they couldn't actually tell what they were spending until they sort of walked out, right? So what they've done is the technology will still exist. It's somewhere in here, but you've kind of got a smart cart. So as you're putting things into the cart, I think it's said in here somewhere that you're able to kind of see what you're putting in the cart. And it gives you a tally of what you've spent. You can still bypass the line, so it's just kind of a shift in the way they're doing this technology. When I saw this first, I was like, "Oh, it's a shame that they got rid of that." I don't think it's anywhere. I don't think it's available in Canada.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. It's pretty much in Whole Foods or. They're fresh stores, right?
Yeah. So I was kind of like, oh, well, that's a shame that they're getting rid of that. But then as you read the article a little bit, you realize they're just kind of, they're not getting rid of it. They're just changing the way it's being used. It's a shame that people are losing their jobs. And as I kind of read a little bit more about this, it looks like the layoffs are actually across a number of departments. So
it's pretty sweeping. Yeah.
Yeah. It said something like sales, training and certification, and then in this sort of technology space. So I don't think it's a huge number of people when you think about it as a percentage of the size of the workforce. But still not great for those folks that are affected. But I still think this is really cool technology. The fact that you just walk by the line.
Yeah, it's still available in the UK, it says, and they have 3 stores open in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised it didn't roll out more than that. It seems off, like, because it's been around for a while. I'm kind of surprised that it's more stores.
They've been working on it for a couple of years, at least. Yeah. Feels like 5 years.
Yeah. It's probably not an easy technology solution, right?
No.
Yeah. If you're not working on it every day, it's probably far harder from a technology perspective than a consumer like me would envision it being.
Yeah, because you have to track a customer throughout the whole store, and you got to identify every single product that they pick up and put in the cart, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's probably technically challenging. All right, what's next? I sprung this one on you. I added it as I was making the list, and these articles are just fun, right? Like, as soon as I saw the headline, I'm like, oh, I got to include this. Inspirational, terrifying vision of financial services. And, basically the entire article is feast or famine type thing, right? Like, financial services are going to change dramatically over the next couple decades from Gen AI. But, you know, I mentioned to you before we got started that the last sentence is what grabbed my attention. There are 2 types of people in the world: those who are thinking about how AI can give them an edge, and those who will be replaced by AI.
Right.
Yeah.
That seems to be kind of the general sentiment about the technology, right?
The
it's
theme.
Kind of why it's so scary.
Yeah. Those are great sentences, because look at what it did with us. It made me put it in the list and talk about it and stuff. And they catch people's attention, obviously. I don't necessarily think it's an untrue statement, but who knows how it's going to actually play out over the next Well, you can see here, you know, they're talking specifically about finance. The financial institution will be set of will basically be a set of algorithms in the next 20 to 30 years. Right. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, this is kind of what the smart contract people with Ethereum were trying to figure out, and Bitcoin and all that, and that didn't pan out. We're still using the U.S. dollar as the world currency reserve, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
I've been reading some Cory Doctorow books lately. We talked about Cory Doctorow last week too. I mentioned Makers in passing, right? And my sister is a librarian, and I was talking to her on the weekend, and she gave me a couple books, and it's two Cory Doctorow books. So one is Red Team Blues. I read it in a day. It is fantastic. Yeah. Cory Doctorow, just like sci-fi kind of writing and stuff. If you're into sort of technology and things, I just find his books really engaging. And then I'm working on one now called Walkaways, and it's essentially, it kind of reminded me of this a little bit. It's not directly related to Gen AI or anything like that, but sort of in the future, there's this big divide between people who have a lot of stuff and people who do not. And the and a certain portion of the population simply walks away. They go off and do their own thing. And what's really cool about Walkaways, and what totally unrelated to this, is it talks a lot about Southern Ontario. So they talk.
Oh, really?
He's talking about Orangeville. He's talking about the Niagara Escarpment, and you know, as you're flipping through the book reading it, you're like, "Hey, that's kind of neat. I know where that is." So it's kind of cool. But what made me think about it with this is, again, like that idea of makers, and with Walkaways, people just, you know, not deciding that they're not part of society anymore and going to go off. At one point in this article, the author does say something along the lines like the keynote said something like, essentially what might happen is, here you go, AI will create immense wealth, but that wealth will be poorly distributed, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it also said somewhere in here, I won't be able to find it now, but basically sort of the concept of universal income, because of that sort of unevenly distributed wealth ends up...
That imbalance.
People end up on this idea of universal income because they're just no longer employable because of the giant shift in AI and how it's taking these jobs and stuff. So this is an interesting article, and I do agree with that last statement here. Two types of people, thinking about it or not thinking about it. And I would say that, you know, if you're thinking about what you want to do next, this is probably where you should be spending your brain power, right? Trying to figure out how you get these skills because they're in demand.
Yep, that's the consensus, it looks like. Yeah, there's so many ways this could go, right? You could end up feast, famine, or, well, I mean, most likely end up somewhere in between. But.
Yeah, or you could go down the path, like what you said, with smart contracts and stuff. It just never really pans out, and then it takes another couple of years, and we go on to the next thing. Like,
right.
I kind of don't see how this doesn't pan out in some form, but... Yeah. You know, interesting, just we were talking about feast and famine. There was an article which I'll put in the newsletter, and I'll put it in the newsletter because for some reason it didn't end up in our cheat sheet for today. Oops. Remember what I was saying? I've had kind of one of those weeks. But the article is about one of the early Gen AI companies that did or that does image generation. What was it?
Okay. Was it Midjourney or?
No.
Or Hugging Face, something like that?
Stable? Is it Stable?
Stable Diffusion.
Yeah. I don't quote me on that because I'm not quite sure, but I'll put it in the newsletter on the weekend. Essentially, though, the article was about how they make no money and.
Yeah.
How at this point they're unable to pay for all of the compute resources that people are consuming to generate images. And I'm not sure. I think they said for sure the CEO was replaced because they couldn't figure out how to turn it into a money-making operation.
Gotcha.
And I'm not sure if other people sort of were asked to go find something else to do as well, but it made me think of it again because of this article, this idea of feast and famine. It's not just for, you know, people, regular people, but it's also even these companies, I don't think necessarily have it completely figured out on how they turn this into revenue generating opportunities. Yeah.
Absolutely not. Well, you look at just OpenAI, right? Like, they need, they're going to need billions of dollars to train their next models. It's just an absurd amount of money and compute and electricity you have to spend to get this kind of tech working.
Yeah.
So we're gonna see a lot of effort go into like more efficient chip designs for these models in the next few years, because otherwise they just won't be able to afford to run them.
Yeah.
Or train them.
Yeah. And you know, when you think about the electricity that's required, you could take that off in all sorts of different directions, you know, with climate change and stuff like that, just having to generate all this power to run all of the training to do this. We're already in a bit of a bad situation, and now we're just generating even more and more power to try to keep up with this. It could also be an unintended side effect to some of this stuff, right?
Yeah, I saw something where a Microsoft person said at one point that they tried to run 100,000 H100 GPUs in a state, but it took out the power grid. they can't power this stuff. It's a little tongue in cheek, right? But it kind of demonstrates you need a huge amount of resources to do this.
And everybody's worried about EVs making the grid fall down. I think all these chips are probably more likely to cause the issue in the end, but again, who knows how it's going to play out, right?
I
pulled the one other article out. I'll just put it in the newsletter instead, but because we talk about Bedrock so much, I stumbled across this, and I'm not 100% sure about this, but I understand why they wrote the article, because this is so, well, it's just the thing, right? So basically running account management through an agent in Bedrock and then tying that solution to Control Tower. So if you're not familiar, Control Tower is a way to sort of manage, according to AWS best practice, a fleet of AWS accounts, and Control Tower takes care of, let me say it this way, account provisioning, account decommissioning, and placing guardrails into those environments. And now you've got a front end for that, I guess, if you wanted to think of it that way.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. Here's the solution. Nice reference diagram. I always like the pictures. Yeah. I don't know about this. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. It just kind of, to me, it seems like one of the use cases of this technology is going to be just a generic chat interface on top of APIs. And that's what this is. You don't have to set up a web app, I suppose, but you set up a chat bot that can understand and point you in the right direction. So it gives you natural language easier.
Yeah. And I'm smiling because, and Kevin is here with us today. And I know Kevin was heavily involved in voice skills and stuff. I won't say the keyword because I got a couple of them looking at me and I don't want them to fire up. This reminds me a lot of voice technology.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole idea of voice was like, I could just say Echo, like, and I thought about this. Echo, tell me how much I'm spending in AWS. Echo, create a new AWS account for me. Like, it's a voice interface to the APIs behind the scenes. This is now a fancier chatbot that has AI built into it. In front of a bunch of APIs. I don't know. Just because you can build something doesn't mean that you should. That was kind of my immediate reaction to this one. And again, I don't know if I'm missing the point here, but it just kind of, that's what kind of jumped out at me, my first impression of this.
Well, if you wanted to, you could set up an Alexa skill, pass that to Lex, and then pipe the voice into this thing, and then... get it to work that way.
Yeah,
like, you could get it all.
And you know, just because we were talking about, you know, what does this look like in the next decade? Like, voice was the thing 5-6 years ago. Like, everything was going to be voice, and I bought into it. Like, I'm like, think about the utility of voice as people age. as people are younger and maybe don't have the skills yet to interact, like, you know, in a typical interface with keyboards and stuff like that. You just, I remember my nephew when he was little, he'd come over here, he'd talk to that Echo nonstop. He figured out how to use it.
Yeah.
Like, it was the huge thing. And
kids just pick it up real quick, yeah.
Yeah. And as you get a little older, right, just being able to talk to something using your voice, you don't have to have, you know, you don't have to have fancy interfaces or anything like that. You can use your voice. The potential there, I thought, was limitless. And this kind of reminded me a lot of that. Let's just plunk something in front of it just because we can. I don't know. Right?
Yeah. Maybe this is kind of the brain you can use to kind of take that to the next level. I wonder if it'll push voice up a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. Did you, do you have the article up? Can you see it?
I do have it up. Yeah.
Do you notice the third word in, the first sentence of the overview?
Prior to delving.
we'll just leave it there.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And you know, I looked at this and I was like, okay, maybe I'm just in a grumpy mood because I ran out of coffee today, right? As I'm reading this.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe I'm just, it's almost the weekend. You're just crusty because it's been one of those weeks, right? And then I scroll down and I'm like, okay, keep reading, keep going. I'm like, okay, great. I know how to do all this. And then I saw this. A screenshot of user interaction for Bedrock to vend a security tooling account. Like,
what? It's just prompting.
Yeah.
It's just giving, like, you could write an API to do that pretty easily, right?
Yeah. Like what's,
you'd have to parse it yourself. Yeah. It's parsing it for you, I suppose.
The only thing that I could see in here that's even remotely interesting is after this prompt here, it generated your Terraform configs.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can tell you this morning, I used Bedrock to do it because I've never tried this before, actually. I always do this with Q, right, and Code Whisperer, like right in my IDE. And I was thinking about Control Tower, and I needed, this is the strangest thing, I needed a key policy for Control Tower to encrypt config and all that stuff, right, the logs coming out of it. So I went to the Control Tower documentation, and damned if I could find the example key policy. You'd think it'd be front and center, right? Could not find it. So I'm like, oh, and I was already in the account. So I just went to Bedrock and I said, generate me a CloudFormation template in YAML format for a CMK that can be used with Control Tower to encrypt config and CloudTrail. And it spit me out a template. It was wrong. Like it was a valid key policy, right? I put that in, CloudFormation would have deployed it for me, but it didn't have the appropriate permissions for configure Control Tower. And, you know, first off, I'm like, what's Gen AI actually doing for you here? These are voice skills that we used to create. And again, Kevin knows this, right? These are voice skills that we used to create. I think they were called utterances. Same thing.
Yeah.
And then I saw this and I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's generating a template. Is it? Like, could you just take this template and run it, right? Like, so I see what they're doing here. The code looks good. Go ahead and create the account. Yeah. I don't know.
Use that as a tree. It's the flexibility, I think, right? That's kind of what they're trying to sell. So, you're doing a couple different things here. Configuring the template and then deploying it.
You're more optimistic than I am. I'm thinking that what we're doing here is we're trying to find use cases for this thing in any possible way that we can.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, like I use Bedrock every day. Like I'm not using fancy agents and stuff. I typically am in the playground. I'm using it to help me proofread articles. I'm having it write outlines for me that we then take and turn into other things. Like I find it as a utility. It's an invaluable part of my daily work now. Like when I think about Bedrock and I think about things like Code Whisperer and Q, I use those nonstop through the day. I'm just having a hard time taking that type of work and turning it into something like this. I think this is a stretch.
Yeah.
I think it's a stretch.
Well, the other thing is like code is some of the hardest stuff to get right, work to get right for this kind of tooling, right? It's statistical in nature, so it's going to be predicting the most common denominator template that you can generate based on what you give it, right? Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, I just saw Kevin's comment in chat. Now I just talk to myself. Yeah. I still believe in voice. I just think it's maybe another decade before somebody figures out how to actually make it useful to people, right?
Well, this is just the interface, right? Like, you put this on top of some tool to help you. Like, it can fetch information, like general knowledge information, pretty well. And if you train it in specific domains, it'll fetch information that you would want to know decently well, right? Yeah. So, for generating stuff that has to be 100% exactly right, though, it's not quite there.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there, and you said it earlier on, like, sort of purpose-built models, models that are really good at doing one thing, or, you know, let's use the term one thing. Like, I think that I would be more interested in seeing use cases built for that. Like, how do I take all of this institutional knowledge in a safe way, right?
Yeah.
And use it to train a model like, I don't know, like, let's just say we build a knowledge base, custom knowledge base for our Bedrock agent, and we're going to use model X, right? Like, I think, like, I want to see those use cases. This appeals to me as a technology person, but I don't really see the vast majority of people ever finding any value in what we're looking at right here. Right. So,
like, what does this really do? It abstracts away the need to know how to interact with the control tower console, basically.
Yeah.
That's all that's happening.
It's adding a layer of abstraction on top of a layer of abstraction. Because control tower, from my perspective, was already a layer of abstraction on top of organizations, right?
Yep.
So now you've added a layer on top of a layer. I don't know. I might be missing the point here, but this one didn't jump out at me. It did remind me, though, of something interesting. And remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Devin?
Oh, yeah.
Devin is still... I saw an article today, and I didn't have time to look at it, so maybe I'll find it and I'll throw it in the list for next week. But it was, again, the idea of agents, I think, is really where this ends up going. Because what they had was another use case of a person asking it to write a paper for something, a research paper or something like that. And again, I know these are these are just showing capabilities. But what was really interesting is Devin then sat down and said, these are all the things I'm going to do this. And then it went off and did it, and it asked the person for more information as it was working on stuff.
Yeah.
That to me is interesting. This is just a chatbot, and we've had those forever, right?
So. Yeah, this is just another way to do a chatbot.
Yeah.
The All thing right. that's
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the thing that's really interesting with stuff like tools like Devin to me is that I think there's like two kinds of AI models right now, right? There's the reinforcement learning models that are specced into one specific field they're really good at, like AlphaFold or AlphaGo, those kinds of DeepMind models that are kind of like expert systems. And there's like the general kind of large language models that are really good at generating text or interpreting text. So if you can kind of find a way to mix those together, I think you get something really special. Yeah. The thing with the generative models is you almost need like a feedback loop or review system to kind of get it to evaluate, like, was this actually good? Which is how you train reinforcement models, right? Mm. So once they figure out how to do that, then maybe they can get something useful. Yeah.
And that's kind of what I thought Devin was trying to do, right?
Yeah.
Like, it goes off and does a little bit of work, and then if it isn't sure or it needs clarification, it kind of comes back to you and says, clarify this for me, or, you know, asks you for more information. I haven't tried it, so I don't know. I've just seen other people running through demos, and kind of interesting. So, yeah, I think eventually it's agents. And like you said, then if you could extend the capability of those agents from large language models into reinforcement learning and stuff like that, that where it gets really powerful. That's it for updates for the week. But I wanted to end the week with this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So AWS Canada Security Week. If you're not in Canada, you can still go. We won't hold it against you.
It won't stop you.
yeah. We're nice up here. We're friendly. But you can see here, April 8th to 12th. I already got a couple notifications. You said you were going to register for this. Did you do it?
I did. Yeah, I signed up for all of them.
Okay. And, yeah. So these are all the modules you can look at, right? Or all the sort of things you can go to. You know, when we talk about sort of what's important in AWS, obviously security is, what does AWS say, job zero or something like that. You know, it's yep. something we often see people overlook in the rush to do the fun, cool stuff. But it can end up biting you in the ass in the long run. So having a secure environment from day one is super important. So free, you know, you just got to register, 1 hour virtual sessions. I don't really think you can go wrong with signing up for these and jamming some more security info into your heads, right?
For sure.
Perfect. Well, that's the show. I'm trying to think if we've got any sort of shameless plugs or anything to do. Oh, we do have a shameless plug. It's about a month yes. away. We are going to have, I think it's the end of April, last Friday of April, I think it is, April 26th. You can find this. I'll share it in the newsletter, and I should have had a slide for this. Maybe next week we'll make a slide. Our outro slide will have this. We're going to do a special edition, a special episode of Talking Cloud, and we've got some really smart folks joining us from AWS. It is 100% going to be a session on Gen AI, sort of technical yep. and a business discussion. And like I mentioned, that will be, I think it's the last Friday of the month. Of April. So I'll get an outro slide for that for next week. But yeah, that's the one shameless plug. So that should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe they can get rid of some of my crustiness that I've displayed today, that I'm not completely sold on some of this stuff.
Right? Yeah, they might be able to convince you a little
convince
bit more.
Convince me. Yeah, I think we've got, and maybe this is something. Oh, hold on. Uh-oh. Speaking of voice skills, Alexa. Alexa, stop. Telling me I got to be somewhere. That's the irony. Yeah, maybe what we should do, maybe what I should do is, instead of being grumpy about some of these things, sit down and try to build out some of my own use cases and do some learning myself to see if I can wrap my head around some of these things. Cause I'm having a hard time connecting these things to how organizations would use this stuff in real life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
I need to play around with the chatbot of my own.
Yeah, there you go. So on that high note, let's wrap it up for the day, folks. Enjoy your weekends. Monday is the big day. If you're in, what do they call it? The
path of totality for the eclipse.
The path of totality. That sounds like that's like, you know, that's going to be
that's
like
a sci-fi novel.
It's an, I was, yeah, it's probably, I was thinking it's an action. It's a 2025 action movie starring like Liam Neeson or something like that, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Sort of sounds like a movie, right? But I guess if you're close to it, very safely stare at the sun. Make sure you've got your glasses. I know you're going to try to find it, and I'm going to wander around for a bit here locally because I'm really close to it. So I think I could
just
wander up the street and be staring into the sky and see some cool stuff. So have fun on Monday, but make sure it's safe.
Yes, wear your glasses.
Yeah, make sure you wear your glasses. All right, folks, bye for now. We'll see you all next week.